Yeah. The Maamar Basra Lagani actually is comprised of no less than 20 chapters. And it was the Rebbe's custom each year on Yud Shvat to expound one of those chapters. So he would deliver at least one, sometimes multiple Maamarim, which expounded on one of the chapters of the original Maamar that the previous Rebbe had released in advance of his Hilula. So this year corresponds to the ninth chapter of Basra Lagani. So we're going to learn the beginning of the ninth chapter, and then we're going to take a look at a piece, an excerpt of one of the Rebbe's Memorim on that ninth chapter. Okay? And it's going to be about the concept of pillars, amudim. So the background here is, as everybody is somewhat familiar, I think, with Basra Lagani, with this idea that the Shekhinah was once part of the fabric of our world, of the rubric of our existence in a very real and manifest way. And then things changed. Sin changed things. And because of sin, the Shekhinah was pushed further and further away. And then it was the mandate and the mission of many tzaddikim who brought the Shekhinah back to our world, starting from Avraham Avinu, culminating with Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who creates a permanent solution to the problem, so to speak, with the Mishkan. Not only does he bring the Shekhinah, not only is God's presence manifest during the crossing of the Reed Sea and ultimately at Sinai, but in the end, it's the concept of the Mishkan and the Migdash of the sanctuary that Moshe Rabbeinu is commanded by God to build together with the Jewish people in the desert. That's where the Shekhinah becomes manifest in a lasting fashion. So much of the Maamar focuses on the Mishkan, what used to happen in the Mishkan and the Migdash, and how this relates to us in our personal lives. And there's this idea that when it talks about the making of a sanctuary, so it uses a singular tense, because even though every Beit HaKnesset, every synagogue, and every house of Torah study is in some way a Migdash Ma'at, a minor or microcosm of a sanctuary, nonetheless, the mitzvah is to build a sanctuary, or the sanctuary, which is known also in the Rambam's terminology as Beit HaBechira, the chosen home. So it says, Va'asuli Migdash, that's singular. And then the pasuk, the verse goes on to say, V'shachanti, I will dwell b'tocham, amongst them. Which means b'toch, kol achad v'achad, in the heart, mind, and soul of each and every one. But we always go back to the original Mishkan. Because it's the original Mishkan that contains the blueprints for how life is supposed to look and what we're supposed to do to make this world a more beautiful and godly place. So the beginning of the ninth chapter opens up with a focus on the Mishkan. And we say, V'hine, b'mishkan u'migdash, in the Mishkan and Migdash, which are interchangeable, because ultimately the Mishkan is temporary and the Migdash is permanent. So in the Mishkan and the Migdash, shahoyo ha'aveda, in which the efforts that were supposed to be made, the toil expended, was supposed to be in the image of la'ahapcha, within the scheme of turning darkness into light. And darkness is a euphemism from where God's presence is not felt and known into light where God's presence is felt in an illuminated fashion. So in this idea of Mishkan or Migdash, which is built or created to be a transformation of darkness into light, and that's done through Avodas HaBirurim, through the efforts or the toil, which is known as refinement of korbanos, of the offerings. So the offerings become a paradigm of what we're supposed to be doing in the areas of transformation. First and foremost, the Maamar emphasizes the change that we make in our own personal lives, and that the korban, that the animal brought as an offering, ultimately serves as a metaphor for the animal soul that every one of us has. And just because a person's born a certain way, with certain desires, doesn't mean that that's great. It means that they were given challenges to overcome. So every one of us has, we'll say, deficiencies. One person's deficiency is his temerity or timidness, and the other person is his aggression or his arrogance. So both are not good. Both are inappropriate. The sheep to the slaughter is not a great way to live life. To be a bull in a china shop isn't either. So what should we do with the bull, the sheep, or the wild goat who just behaves in a manner which is totally incongruous and inappropriate and not in keeping with the Torah's will, what should we do with these things? So the answer is you take the animal and you drain its lifeblood and you incinerate it with a holy fire. And that's, in our lives, it means you take the behemah, the nefesh habamis, the animal soul, you drain it of its life and its excitement and its exuberance for all kinds of selfish and ugly pursuits. And instead, you kindle it with a fire of the neshama of holiness. And that's the aveda of refinement, in which we can take the animal soul and we can turn it into a force for good. So the person who has a tremendous amount of arrogance can have that arrogance turned into self-confidence and strength. And he can project a sense of spiritual strength, and he can walk tall and be proud as a Jew, and he can illuminate the world without apologizing for existing, as many Jews do. And he takes his negative qualities and he harnesses them and he transforms them, he turns them around, channeling them in a good and a positive way. So where did all this take place? All of this aveda of karbanos, which is paradigmatic of life itself, what a yid is supposed to live life like. So all of this aveda took place in the Mishkan. Okay, what created the precinct of the Mishkan? What created the area of the Mishkan? The answer is walls. Everything has walls. It has an area of scrimmage. Here is where the Mishkan is, and then there's the outside those walls. So everything has to be walled or boxed in. You say, okay, here's what we're going to do in this space, and here's what we're going to do in another space. You know, today it's very popular. People talk about open concept. Right? So open concept means the living room bleeds into the kitchen. The kitchen bleeds into the dining room. And some people say, one second, this is too open for me. I need a little defined space. I want my dining room to look a certain way. I want my family room to look a different way. I want my kitchen to look a different way. I don't want to have this open space. Right? They forgot that once upon a time, that's all people had, is one big room. And then as people became more able, they started to build individual rooms. Because open space isn't so great. In the end, you need a sign of demarcation. And then sometimes it becomes obsessive, where people have to wall everything off and have every little detail set aside, and then the house looks very compartmentalized. So then we swing back, the pendulum goes the other way. Now it's popular to have open concept again. And then it goes away from open concept, but the idea is we're always struggling with this notion of walls and borders and boundaries and precincts and areas, demarcation. It's a thing that human beings struggle with. You always want to have the right amount of walls, but not too many walls. You want to have the right amount of definition, but not being too harshly defined. Anyway, that's, be that as it may, the Mishkan has its specific area of demarcation. And just like later on in the Beis HaMikdash, the Korban can only be brought in such a place, but not in such a place. So the Aveda of Korbanos is this wondrous thing, which is a mystery to us. But the Raz of the Korbana, the mystery of the Korban, is Eila. It penetrates and goes up to the Raz of the Insaif, the mystery of the oneness of God. We don't really understand what a Korban is and how it works. But we do know it can only work in this area. And in this area, what creates the demarcation for the actual Mishkan area? I'm not going to say the structure, because there was no roof, really, on the whole big area. But in the Mishkan, there was an actual roof, where there was at least, there was a soft covering, right? You had various cloths, and you had skins. So what created the actual structure? The temporary, albeit, but actual structure. And the answer is the broader area was with poles and hangings or cloth, but the actual Mishkan was comprised of boards. And the Torah says, "Ve'asisa es ha-krushim." You have to make these krushim, but these krushim, or these boards, were oimdim. They were upright. Shenikrayim krushim b'shem oimdim. They're called krushim specifically because they're upright. That's what the Hebrew word keresh means. Keresh, in North America, when people first came and they needed to build a dwelling for themselves, the cheapest, the most effective way to build a dwelling when there's an endless supply of wood is to create a log cabin. And how are log cabins built? With logs. And how do you build it? You pile the logs one on top of the other. And it didn't take a tremendous amount of creativity to create interlocking logs. So you could have four directions and you could have interlocking logs, and then you could throw some mud in between, and you were able to create a rough home. And it worked. It worked. More or less, it worked. Logs lie flat. Krushim are not logs. Krushim are boards or planks. And these boards and planks are called in Hebrew boards and planks. The difference in logs and planks is that the planks are upright, whereas the logs lay flat. So they're called krushim because they're oimdim, because they're standing. The Friedrich Rebbe says, "V'hu al derech ma'asha ha-mitzvah nikra amudim." I want you to know, he says, that this is why mitzvahs are referred to as pillars. Because the pillar of the mitzvah alludes to the keresh, the plank, which creates the locale of the Mishkan, God's sanctuary. The Taryag mitzvahs ha-Torah, the Taryag, the 613 mitzvahs of the Torah, are augmented by Zion mitzvahs that are bonded by seven rabbinic mitzvahs, which together are referred to as Tarach Amudayar. Tuf Resh Yud Gimel is 613, because Tuf is 400, Resh is 200, and then Yud Gimel is 13, so Taryag comes out to be 613. But when you add 7 to 13, you have 20, which is symbolized with the Hebrew letter Chof. And together it spells Tuf Resh Chof. So this is what's called Tarach Amudei Or. Now this idea is first documented or articulated in a prayer that was composed by the author of the Sefer HaBoher, which is the second major work of Kabbalah ever to be compiled, and his name was Reb Nechunya ben Hakana. So in the tefillah of Reb Nechunya, that's where we have this idea of mitzvahs being described as amudim, as pillars or planks. But it's an ancient idea. That's the first time that it's documented. So this is explained by the Alter Rebbe in Igeres HaKedesh, where the Alter Rebbe uses the metaphor or the image of the plank to say that the mitzvah or mitzvah plank is kamay in amud, it's like a pillar. What function does a pillar serve? It's what connects the ceiling and the floor. So the way you keep the ceiling up is with strong pillars. And then you have li yosem ka echad mamish. They become like one continuous reality. So the empty space, the hollow space, which makes up the living quarters or whatever particular function that space has, is created or it's allowed to exist through the pillars. Because without the pillars, the roof collapses. With the roof collapses, you have no space. So what keeps the floor and the roof where they're supposed to be? The pillars in between. And the pillars enable this space. Hine, says the Friedrich Rebbe, k'meiken ha-mitzvahs heim amudim. The mitzvahs are pillars. Sheim amshichim u'mechabrim eirin seif baruchu im ha-olamis. Which they actualize and they connect, they conjoin the infinitude of God, or the light or energy, which is called godliness, with olamis, with the worlds. The worlds are like the floor. And godliness like the heavens. And the mitzvahs are the pillar. And that's the connection. This is also the reason that the Mishkan's walls were comprised of acacia wood, which was from which the plank was fashioned, and they're oimdim dafke. They have to be standing upright. Why? Because they have a representation, and the representation is sheheim hamechabrim oirin seif baruchu meilumis, because they bring together the infinite light of God and the world in which we live, the space we occupy. So that's the opening volley of Eis Test, the opening volley of the ninth chapter of this Maimer, is the notion that mitzvahs are pillars, and pillars are found in the Mishkan as the detail that creates the actual structure. That's the Krashim, that's the Eimdim. Now in the balance of this Eis, the Friedrich Rebbe goes on to talk about the concept of Keresh, how this can represent negativity, but it has to be cut down, the pillars have to be cut to size, and from negativity becomes positivity, and he explains how this represents, and it becomes in the larger way emblematic of the journey of a Jew here on earth, the fulfillment of life and purpose of life. But I want to focus on just this opening part of the Maimer, where mitzvahs are metaphorized as pillars. Okay, so now I'm going to turn, I made your photocopies on the bottom half of the paper, I'm going to turn now to a Maimer, which the Rebbe recited on Yud Shvat, on the occasion of the Hilul of the Yahrzeit. And this Maimer, like all of the Maimarim of Yud Shvat, begins with the words Basi Lagani. This was recited in January of 1979. And 2019 is, so to speak, back at the 9th. This was the second time around. So this is now we're in the fourth time around on the 9th Eis. So in that Maimer, in the second chapter, where the Rebbe, in the first two paragraphs, gives a synopsis of the first eight chapters of the Maimer, in synoptic form, just highlights a number of key principles that are articulated in the beginning of the Maimer. And then he says, Umamshir Baha Maimer, and the Maimer continues in Perek Tes. The Zehu Gamkin, that this is also Masha HaKroshim Nikroyim B'Shem Oimdim. The fact that Kroshim are called boards or pillars that are upright, planks that are upright. Kumisha Kosuf, like it says in the Pasuk, Vasisa HaKroshim LaMishkan, you have to make the planks or boards for the Mishkan. Atzei Shitim Oimdim, it's made of this cedar slash acacia wood, standing. The Oimdim, standing, Hu Inyan Amudim, is very closely related to the concept of pillars. Asfodindain ke asfodindain. Here the Rebbe quotes a Zoharic sentence in which he says that there's corollary between the letters. The Hebrew letters are the same. Oimdim and Amudim are basically the same Hebrew letters. The only difference is where you put the Vav. If the Vav is after the Ayin, Oimdim, or the Vav is transposed one letter over and it's after the Mem, which spells Amudim. So in Hebrew, which is not an arbitrary language, in which people decided, let's call this a pillar. Why not call it a tiller? I don't know, because we're going to call something else a tiller. This is going to be a pillar. So is a tiller and a pillar, or a parlor, is not necessarily connected one to the other. The pillar and the parlor are almost alike, but not really. In fact, they have nothing to do with each other. But in Hebrew, since it's a godly language, and everything is precise and exact, including the letters, the Hebrew letters that are used, and even the way the Hebrew letters are arranged, everything's exact. And if you have a word which is almost exactly, an almost perfect replica, but one little move, you just one letter over. So then that means there must be some kind of corollary, there must be some kind of parallel between the two. And that means they're almost basically the same. Now, truth be told, and physically, literally, they're also almost exactly the same. The difference between the Amudim and the Oimdim is that the Oimdim describes the structure, the posture of the structure, that it's upright, and the pillar is actually an Amud, an upright piece of the structure. So they are really almost the same. The Hu, and this is Al Yedei Masha HaMitzvahs Nikroyim Amudi Or. This is through the notion that the mitzvahs are referred to as pillars of light. Okay, let's talk about pillars. Ukemoi ha'amud, just like a pillar. Harehu mechaber hagag v'haritzpah. It connects the ceiling and floor. Lehiyosam ke'echad mamash. That they should be as one. The roof and the floor are not in different areas. They comprise the same area. And what keeps them together and what enables the space, as we said, is the pillar. Hinei kemoi kein sotu ha'mitzvahs. Hey, Mamudim, they are pillars. Shehim Mamshichim Umechabrim Oirin Seif Baruch Hu Imo Elamez. They are pillars that connect, that conjoin, that actualize godliness with this world. So just like the pillar enables the space to exist, and it keeps the roof and the floor tethered to one another, and if the pillars are taken away, then what happens is you no longer have that space, and you no longer have them connected. So too, the mitzvahs serve in the same function. Vehine, the Rebbe begins to note that be'inyan zeh mevayar kveit kedushas admur hazakim be'geres hakedush, the Alter Rebbe, in the part of Tanya which is called the collected epistles, or collected letters, explains, she'ratzayin ha'elyein baruch hu nikra b'shem keser. That God's will is referred to in Kabbalistic terminology as the crown. Why is it called the crown? Asher bekeser, in the Hebrew letters that comprise the word crown, or keter, yesh boi tarach amudei or, that the keter is comprised of 620 pillars of light. Surely you didn't miss the fact that tarach and keter are the same Hebrew letters, just scrambled the other way. So instead of keter, in which the chaf would be in the front, spelling crown, here we put chaf at the end, so it turns into a chaf sofit, a long chaf, but instead of keser, we have tarach, same Hebrew letters. What does this mean? So, many of you are familiar with the Kabbalistic imagery, which cannot, chas v'shalom, ever be taken literally. I recently had somebody ask me, can you please share with me a diagram of the different floors? Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, just so I have a diagram. I said, no, there's no diagrams of floors. These are not floors. I said, not any more than I can tell you the way yellow tastes in contradistinction to pink. It doesn't work like that. There's no taste between one color and another. That's not what makes taste the colors apart from one another. And what makes Atzilus or Bria or Yetzira apart from one another is not location. This is not a location thing. I said, you want to have a gestalt, subconsciousness, thought, speech, and deed. There you go. That's Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya. That's easy to envision. Not physically, because it's not a physical thing. So, but Kabbalah does use imagery. And of course, the difference between those who actually understand the teachings of Kabbalah and those who are spouting mumbo-jumbo is those who simply, one of the differences, is people who use imagery and make the Kabbalah, the Kabbalistic truths, technical, instead of those who understand that the Kabbalistic ideas and ideals and imagery is all a metaphor. It's just the imagery is used to help us to comprehend deeper spiritual truths. And in the same way that it would be ridiculous to say that this is a lofty idea, therefore you should climb a ladder to catch it, or this is a deep idea, so you better get into a hole, and then maybe you'll be able to ingest or grasp the idea. In the same way, you understand that when idea is sweet, it doesn't mean you should mix it in with the sugar crisp and now have nicer cereal, or that if a song is sweet, that it necessarily is going to affect the food you're eating. So these are all metaphors. It's not to be taken literally. So once we understand it, it's not to be taken literally, but there is, Kabbalah does use imagery. So one of the imagery, the famous Kabbalah imagery, is the Kabbalah stick man, in which we have this, right, this little stick man in the, from times of antiquity, people making this drawing where Chabad or Chachman bin Adas exists in the head, and then the right arm is Chesed, the left arm is Gvura, and that's why one is stronger, one is weaker. And if you're a lefty or in your right mind, then it's the other way around. But the point is a stronger hand and a weaker hand, Chesed to be stronger than Gvura, and then we have Teferes, which represents maybe the torso, and then we have the representation of the legs, and so on and so forth. So in the Kabbalah stick man, there's also a crown. The stick man is wearing a hat. He's wearing a hat. So depending on which culture or persuasion you come from, they'll call it a turban, or a shtreimel, or a hat, or a crown. But the point is there's this headgear. And how does headgear end up on the Kabbalah stick man? We have a man, a woman, a person. That's not the point. We have a human being. Why is he wearing a hat? What if a human being is not going to wear a hat? Why does he have to have his head covered? And the answer is that the head covering or the headgear represents a different part of the human faculty. It means just like the highest faculty of the human being is his intelligence, is the Chachma bin Adas. So what's higher even than intelligence? The answer is what goes on top of the head is the headgear. That's the crown. Intelligence is intuition, development and understanding of ideas, decisions, practical perspectives, even the bias to look at things a certain way. So what does the headgear represent? And the answer is the headgear represents two things. It represents ratzon, which means will, and ultimately the highest form of that is something called tainuk. And this is known in Kabbalistic jargon as atik yoimin and arech ampin, which are the two parts of keser. Atik yoimin is the higher part of keser, represents tainuk, and the lower part of keser is called arech ampin. And that's a subject for another day, why it has these names. Point, important point to understand. The ultimate motivator is pleasure. If you ask anybody why they did anything, they'll tell you because they wanted to. Why did you want to? Because I like that. Why'd you go there? Because I wanted to be warm and it's cold outside. So gesund. And why did you want to be warm? Because it's January and because we live in Canada. And that's not comfortable to be cold. But it's comfortable to be warm. So that's why I went. I dislocated myself. I went far away. I went somewhere and it was difficult. It required effort and toil. And it required a great deal of intelligence to figure out how to pick the lock to get in there. Because it wasn't so easy or natural. And I figured it out. I get in there and now I'm warm. So now I'm happy. Why? Because now I'm in a state of pleasure. Now I'm in a state of equanimity and comfort. Do you understand? So the ultimate motivator was I wanted to be happy. I wanted to be in a state of pleasure. Human being was built to strive or have a drive for pleasure. Now, of course, this could be done in a very ugly way where a person's animal inhibitions can override everything and a person can kill, pain, maim, pillage just to get a little bit of pleasure. Welcome to ISIS. in a world which is not filled with monsters, but with high-minded human beings who are seeking a spiritual cause, what's the greatest form of pleasure? What's the most satisfying thing to give? To give, to provide for another. A person who's normal understands that the most satisfying thing of all is not to take, but rather to give. The joy of giving, the joy of giving tzedakah, the joy of enriching somebody else's life, the satisfaction, the fulfillment of parenthood, of being able to make a difference. Now, that and what ISIS does, they're both driven by pleasure. Well, they're both dealing with human beings. One is a monster, which was once upon a time a human being who turned into a monster, and the other is an angel, who was also once a regular human being, who was selfish, not to the point of hurting other people, but selfish, and now is driven by the pleasure of trying to provide for others, do something nice for somebody else. So the human being became an angel. Okay, so here's a human being. You can degenerate into a monster, or I don't say animal, because animals aren't bad, I say monster. You can degenerate into an ISIS monster, or you can become a giving angel. And all this is motivated by pleasure, but practically speaking, what carries that out? The answer is, the will. I want to do it. Why do you do whatever you do? Because I want to. And there's many different levels of wanting to. Somebody say, what are you running now? Because I want to go to work. You want to go to work? Well, not really. But I want to get a salary. And the only way to get a salary is, is it that money? Well, no, I can't eat the dollars. So why do you want the money? I want the money because then I can pay for a roof over my head and then I can have food and so on and so forth. So there's ultimately, there's many levels of ratzon. But ratzon is the will that drives everything. So where there's a will, there's a way. And the point is, that the keter, the headgear, represents the will, which is higher than the intelligence. Because if you will it, if you want it, you'll be able to do it. Like I shared with you on Shabbos, a famous example of the Gemara telling us a story of a sharecropper who was bringing the crops to the owner of the plantation, who happened to be the judge in an upcoming court case. And he said, how can you bring me my crops on Wednesday? Why don't you bring them on Friday like you always do? He said, well, it's because he's going to have a court case and you're going to be the judge. And he said, well, in that case, I can't be. And he recused himself immediately. And then he went to the proceedings just to see. And he's sitting in the back and he keeps saying to himself, he could have said this, he could have said that. In other words, because he had this bias now, because the person did him a favor, his ratzon, his desire to help, all of a sudden changed the way he was thinking. So really and truly, intelligence is the most powerful faculty, but it isn't. What's more powerful? Ratzon. And that, my dear friends, is the idea of keser. And the terach amudir, the keser is Aesias terach. Umevayah, the kemeshi yesh amudim, the beis chayim agadol. Just as there are pillars in this incredible hall, very, very tall ceiling. Nitzavim bereish, vereish mechur betikar. These pillars go all the way up. There's the structure. They're holding up the structure. Kacha mitzvahs al derech mashal. The same thing is also true about mitzvahs. Kame amudim nitzavim mireim mailas. They are like these pillars. They go from the highest levels that represent Ratzon Ha'elyon, which is the supernal will. What does God want? That's the big question. What does God want? God wants us to learn Torah. God wants us to be kind to one another. God wants us to follow his rituals and do his mitzvah. God wants those things. So what connects us to God is carrying out his will. And what is his will? His mitzvahs, the Torah. V'nim shachem ad ha'aretz. It goes all the way down into the ground. Down into the details, the minutia of halachic observance. That's the will of God. V'zeh masha mitzvahs nikroim b'shem amudim. Now you know why mitzvahs are called pillars. Ki heim dugmas inyan amudim. They represent or are emblematic of a pillar. Exactly what the pillar does. It's exactly what the mitzvah does. Namely, l'cha b'res ha'elyon she'en l'maylo mimenu. To conjoin the highest of what, there's nothing higher, the top of the roof, imatachten she'en l'mato, with the lowest level of the floor. Or basement, however low you dug, but wherever the bottom of the structure is, that's the lowest level, and it's ultimately the pillars that make this exist. In other words, the light or energy, which is all the metaphor, of divinity, is drawn into this world. How? Through the pillar. So it's a pillar of light. It's a pillar, it's more like a cable almost. And through this cable, the energy is coming down. And guess what? This pillar is also a silo through which we go up. The chayin aliyas haneshama melmata lamayla. The neshama elevating from below higher is also derech amudim elu. It's through these silos. It's through these pillars. So they're almost like hollow pillars. They're keeping the ceiling up, but they're also allowing for there to be a flow of energy down, and they're allowing for us to move closer to Hashem. And that, my friends, are the mitzvahs. That's the mitzvahs. Va'ad shal yod yodom. It's through this that the neshama could come to bask in the glory of God, as explained in the Geras HaKodesh at length. And this is why the krushim, the boards of the Mishkan, are called imdim, because they're really about amudim, because they conjoin the helam vehester, the concealment of this world, which seems to deny and rule out the concept of godliness. It connects and conjoins it with the highest levels of God, highest levels of divinity. So this is a detail, one detail of the ninth ois, with a detail, one detail of a long maimer, which Rebbe explained it, which helps us appreciate the theme of this year's Yud Shvat, the pillars of light.